Get the. Can we start? Just because I haven't booted up yet. Ready yet? Now? Okay, we'll go ahead and call the meeting of the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee, Thursday, July 28th, 2020 meeting to order. Can we have a roll call vote, please, Daniel or Julian, or who's going to do that?
I can do that. Director Cody?
Here.
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Zimmer?
Here.
Chair Ohilski?
Present.
Okay. All four members present.
Okay. Can we rise for the pledge, please? Yeah, you want to lead us, please?
Yeah. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll move on to item number four. Does any board member have any comments they'd like to make before the meeting starts? No.
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Coote, would you like to go?
Well, in general, first of all, S&T and all its shareholders appreciate what the BMC staff does, Dan. But on a personal note, I'd appreciate having slightly smaller agenda packages and more regular meetings so that this meeting, for instance, we had 4 days to study 117 pages of agenda package. And we skipped a monthly meeting where we could have done some of this, I assume, perhaps not. But if we had monthly meetings, I think we could probably have smaller agenda packages and more time to prepare less material.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else? All right, seeing none, excuse me. I don't know what's going on. Seeing none, we'll move on to item number five, special presentations. We have none. Item number six, the consent agenda. There are three items on the consent agenda: the budget update and invoice register, the approval of minutes from the May 18th meeting, and the approval of minutes from the June 15th meeting. Does anybody have any comments or want to pull any of those items? Okay, we'll go to public comment on this item.
If you'd like to make a comment online, please raise your hand or in person come up to the podium. We have a member of the public that had prepared a comment, but I think the items don't necessarily relate to the consent agenda.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's sorry. Yeah. Sorry. And there's.
Oh, I can speak?
Yes.
Lindy Owen from Los Osos. I just wanted to comment that there are no agendas made available to the public. So I just pulled one. I'm looking at it. I was looking at it online, but I can't connect here. So we would appreciate a packet that the public can have. We used to do those, and we would certainly like to have a current agenda provided. Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other public comment, I'll bring it back to the committee for a motion to approve.
I'll move approval of consent.
Second, please.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, unanimously approved. Okay, number seven, public comments for items not appearing on the agenda. So if you want to talk about something that's not on the agenda, you have your time now. If it is on the agenda, though, wait till that item comes up, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I wanted to discuss a little bit the false narrative that is being perpetuated by a number of quarters regarding water resources in Los Osos. The public listens. They read the New Times and the Trib, and they listen to, I don't know about these meetings, but they listen to other outlets. And it's just, it's got to be such really a persistent noise that, you know, people start to believe this stuff. If you say it often enough, it becomes true. And the most recent article was, you know, SLO County Town looks for new water source to ease water troubles. We have no plan B. It's inflammatory and it's wrong. Just a few of the examples of the false narrative. There's been a comparison of Los Osos to the city of Morro Bay in terms of water resources. We're nothing like Morro Bay. We have a groundwater basin. They don't. They rely primarily on state water. We'd like to just have a little bit to complement our groundwater basin. We've heard that there's not enough water for the folks that live here. That's like almost laughable. It really is a joke. That water is being conserved just to fuel new development. Another false narrative. There's been round criticism about our existing Title 19 program, which has been very successful. And with tweaks to it, we're hopeful it's going to be even more successful in the future. LOCAC, the sustainability group, the media outlets, they've attempted to weaponize the Coastal Commission staff in this whole discussion, which is even more outrageous and bizarre. There's a simple fact I'd like you to all take away. In 1988, we hit peak demand. In our groundwater basin, we used 3,500 acre feet of water annually, 2,500 in the urban area and 1,000 outside. Today, by comparison, we use 2,000 acre feet for all uses in the basin. So are we going to listen to folks that are supporting success or supporting failure? I think that's a real choice we have now, because it doesn't look like they want success. In fact, as you know, we reduced the safe yield of the basin from 2,760 acre feet to 2,380. That's not enough. They want more. Well, how much more? And how much more of the false narrative are we going to continue to take? Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ready? Lindy Owen, Los Osos again. I won't comment on what we just heard, except to go to the report from, it's a 2014 Todd Groundwater Basin report that had strong questions about whether the details and results of conservation measures are actually being screened and carefully applied. It says the indoor water use data cited from the Pacific Institute in 2003 report are out of date. And we've been waiting for the county for 2 years now to update those. And they keep getting more studies and reasons to hold off. I wanted to comment on private well metering, ag and private. Mr. Gibson was quoted in the Tribune article probably like three weeks ago, maybe a month ago, commenting about the Paso Basin and their problems with not any water left after overuse. And he said that all ag and private wells in the Paso Basin needed to be metered. Now, I don't know why that can't be applied to Los Osos, considering that we've asked for it for 7 years now. And we keep hearing that it's going to be discussed. So again, if you're going to take 50% of our basin users and guess how much they use and use that as scientific data to balance our basin, you just, you know, might as well get a fly swatter and, you know, hit a few flies or something, because it's not working. And I, you know, we can't balance a basin until we know how much the outside users, 50% of our basin, how much water use they're using. And I ask that you hurry up and get this monitoring in place. I don't, you know, they don't pay, those users don't pay a penny towards basin management. And perhaps that's where they could contribute. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll wait till I know we're ready.
Hang on, I'm going to share your presentation. Start.
Okay. Becky McFarland, longtime Los Osos citizen and Los Osos lover. Thank you all for being here today and for what you do. I've been learning a lot about the water basin over the last year. And I've asked a couple of times that there be something that just the general public could understand, because a lot of them don't quite get it. So I came up with a little graphic presentation just about one metric. And that's the water level metric, and it's illustrated. Because we are hearing there's improvements, and any improvement is welcome. So on here, we see the water level metric, and that's how high our water should be above sea level, should be 8 feet. In 2021, it was at 2.1 feet. That was an increase of 1.8 feet from the year before. So, but we're still 5.8 feet short of the minimum goal of where we're supposed to be at. People correct me if I'm wrong on that. So I'm 5'6". We're still this much in our basin. You need that much more to be at that 8 feet. So to me, that's quite a bit. I used to teach kids science. So I made this little demonstration with an 8-cup measuring cup. So next one. So this is 8 cups, which equals the 8 feet. And you can see the sea level there at the bottom. In 2021, we were at 1.8 feet above sea level. And you can see that on the left, that's 1.8 cups. In 2021, we're at 2.1. This is the positive increase in tablespoons from 2020 to 2021. It was 0.3 feet or 3.6 inches or 3 tablespoons. Oh, they're not? Did I go too fast?
Is this where you
should be? Oh, next one, I'm sorry. This is the tablespoons. Sorry, I forgot about you, Julian. So there's the 3 tablespoons. That's our improvement. The 0.3 feet or 3.6 inches. And next one. So here's the 5.8 feet that we need to improve. That's 94.4 tablespoons. So yes, we have improvement. Next one. 0.3 feet is an improvement to our water level metric, but should be recognized as very minimal. At this rate of improvement, it would take 19.6 years to reach 8 feet. Hopefully we'll get rain over those years. I want to see it increase. I want our basin to be protected, because we do need to protect it, and we do conserve really well, but more is needed.
Thank you.
And then we have comments online. Give me one moment. And we have Patrick McGivney, who I'll allow to talk. And if anyone else has comments online, please raise your hand. Patrick, please unmute yourself.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm Patrick McGivney. I'd like to first make a comment with one of the from one of the comments that we just heard, one of your speakers, about the fact that we have enough water for the current residents. If we had enough water right now for the current residents, we wouldn't be receiving in our mail notifications that we have to reduce our water again. Some people have to reduce by 15%. Some people are getting notifications of only being able to water certain times of the day. I'd just like to remind the purveyors that any water savings that the community does is to save our basin, not so we can have future development. So once we save the basin and we become sustainable, then we can think about having future development. I'd like to actually also talk about a TM report done by Cleith Harris in March 3rd of 2017, and it's entitled Basin Yield Metric Response to Reduce Long-Term Precipitation in the Los Sauces Groundwater Basin. He has a graph, and this was done in 2016 when the BMC raised the sustainable yield to 2760. So the graph shows with the projected lack of precipitation, if you were to get 100% of what the historic average was, then you would have a sustainable yield of 2760. If you only got 90% of what historic was, your sustainable yield then would be 2490. If you got 80% of what that average was, you would only have 2220 acre feet. And if it was at 67% of what your historic yield was, you would only be down to 1870 for a sustainable yield. The basin yield metric, if you had 100%, would be 2210, and we were doing 2010, so we were under that. But then if it was 90%, it would be 1990 would be your basin yield metric. And also at 80%, it would be 1780. And if you were using the 67% of your historic rainfall, you would only have a BYM of 1500 that you could be doing. So it's interesting that in 2016, the BMC decided to use the 100% of our annual rainfall, instead of looking at Spencer's graph on here and at least using, if not the 90 or 80, 76%, any of those would have been better than using the 100%. So I would like to have you start thinking about changing the metrics and going back to the sustainable yield that Spencer had outlined in 2017 in his TM report. And I would suggest we go at least 80%, which would be giving us a basin yield metric at 1780 acre feet a year. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
There are no other comments online.
Okay, seeing that, we'll close public comment. And ready to move on to item number eight. Oh, I didn't. Okay, we'll move on to item number eight, the executive director's report.
Thank you, Marshall. Let me find my spot here. So again, executive director's report focused on the updates from the previous month's executive director's report. The first item is we received some additional feedback regarding the Los Osos Basin's eligibility for grant funding under the Prop 1 Sustainable Groundwater Management Grant Funding Program. And the feedback was that the basin is currently not, is because of the basin is prioritized as very low, it is not eligible for that grant funding program, which because a minimum requirement for that program is that the basin be classified as medium high or in a critically overdraft priority condition. Additionally, we got some input from DWR and their interpretation of how the adjudication and the passage of the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act impacted their interpretation of the date that the Los Osos Basin became adjudicated. And so that's included in your executive director's report, as well as attached as an email correspondence from DWR's representative. Other updates, update on the water recycling funding grant model. The CSD has had some recent correspondence with the State Water Resources Control Board on the timing of their review and approval of our grant funding application. Unfortunately, that feedback was that due to a number of competing priorities, the State Board doesn't anticipate being able to get us an agreement for another 3 months. And so we are still on hold with being able to issue the RFP and to select a groundwater modeling consultant and other consultant to complete that study and the transient model update. The silver lining of that is, though, is at least if we are have more information on the timeline, it can help let the BMC make more informed decisions on what it might want to do with the funding that we budgeted for this calendar year for the peer review consultant. And so that'll come up in a later item, but it doesn't appear we're going to need that funding this calendar year for peer review consultant. So there may be opportunities to use that fund for other key BMC initiatives. But still optimistic that we're going to get the grant. It's just taking longer than we anticipated. The monitoring, Lower Aquifer Monitoring Evaluation, we have recommendations at a later agenda item. The BMC Legal Counsel Initiative update. BMC party staff representatives participated in interviews with four legal counsel representatives, and we'll be making a selection and bringing a recommendation for a selection and bringing that back to the BMC for approval at a future meeting. But of note, we got, as I mentioned previous, we got lots of interest and had very qualified candidates and based on our discussions yesterday. So excited about the opportunity to bring in some additional legal support from the BMC. Many of these candidates have lots of experience working in other groundwater basins, both adjudicated and Sigma basins, and dealing with similar issues, both from a groundwater management, a water rights perspective, but also from organizational and funding and financing perspectives as well. An update from the county on the Title 19 water offset study. That project is progressing, and schedule updates will be provided at the link below. The ADU ordinance update. Let's see. I believe this item got continued. The item on August 9th, staff will be recommending that the ADU ordinance be continued. So it won't be taking action. If approved, the Board of Supervisors won't be taking action on the item at that point. With respect to the vacation rental ordinance, the Board of Supervisors held a hearing and adopted a resolution to accept Coastal Commission's suggestions for modifications to that ordinance at their meeting on July 14th, 2022. We have some updated wastewater and recycled water flows and some updates on the basin plan programs. So exciting update for Program A, the Upper 8th Street Aquifer, LOCSD Upper Aquifer Well. The piping and all the equipment is installed, and CSD staff is working through the process with the regulatory agency, the Division of Drinking Water, to get that well approved for providing potable water into the CSD water distribution system. The benefit of that well, it'll allow the CSD to increase shift production from lower aquifer wells to upper aquifer wells, or that upper aquifer well, blend those two water sources to provide clean, safe drinking water but at the same time reduce pumping within the lower aquifer and benefit seawater intrusion. And then the other update to the program, Seawell, expansion well number two, the CSD has awarded the drilling phase of the project to a contractor and is working with that contractor to begin drilling that well. as well as the CSD has awarded a contract to the pipeline designer that will design the pipeline that will allow the water from that well, once drilled and equipped, to be conveyed to the CSD's distribution system. So good progress on two critical programs, programs A and C, that will benefit the basin. And that concludes my executive director's report.
Any questions of Daniel before we go to public comment?
Yeah, I want to know if there's some clarification required from your paragraph in your executive director's report that describes the prioritization of our basin by the Division of Water Resources. And also, that seems to be repeated in the email letter from the DWR. There's an implication that the Los Osos Basin is no longer considered in critical overdraft. And I believe that that's incorrect. That I went and checked that the Division of Water Resources, the state of California, still does consider the Los Osos Basin in a state of critical overdraft. So am I incorrect about that? Is there clarification required?
Yeah, I can clarify it based on my understanding. DWR has multiple classifications for groundwater basins. One is the basin priority, and that has a very low, medium, high, and critically overdraft designation. DWR has a second characterization or classification for classifying wells as whether or not they are in a critically overdraft condition. By that second classification, Los Osos is classified as being in critically overdraft. However, under the prioritization classification, a separate system, Los Osos was reduced from critically overdraft to very low priority as a result of it being an adjudicated basin. And it's that first classification that DWR looks at when evaluating eligibility for the Sustainable Groundwater Management Grant Program.
Thank you for clarifying that. I think it's easy to misunderstand from reading this.
It's yes, unfortunately, it's not as straightforward as, I think we all would like.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions before we go to public comment?
Yeah, I just have, can you repeat, I think you went over the WRFP, the grant for the model. What is the status of that? Can you repeat that again, please?
So the status of the Water Recycling Funding Program grant, which was envisioned to pay for half of the transient model in the Water Recycling Fund or Program study, that application was submitted by the CSD back in March or a while ago, and that application is currently under review by the State Water Resources Control Board.
So do we anticipate getting information by the end of the year? And the reason why I ask is because we have further down on our agenda with the monitoring improvements for a couple of the wells. I think we're planning to take some money, some matching funds, and use it for this new project. So just want to make sure we don't spend those funds and then need them before the end of the year is kind of where I'm going.
Yeah, no. And that was what was helpful that the State Board provided this time was a timeline for when we would know. And so they said 3 months from now would be the earliest that we could have either notification or an agreement. So at that point, we're going to be in November. It's going to take a couple of months to procure the groundwater modeling consultant. And so the peer review consultant wouldn't be needed until at least that point, and we'll be well into calendar year 2023. And so, yeah, that's why in the later item, there's a recommendation to repurpose those funds.
Okay, thank you. I just got one other thing. So just a comment on your overall report. One of the things we talked about was putting in your meetings and events and future meetings that you plan to attend. Are you planning to start including that in the agenda? Or I thought we agreed on that last time. And
Yes, we did agree to that. I'm trying to think if I've missed anything, but I don't think I have any special meetings. I haven't included anything because I haven't attended or planned to attend any special meetings on behalf of the BMC since the LOCAC community outreach event.
That's what I assumed because nothing was listed, but I didn't.
It's always good to check.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we'll go to public comment.
If you'd like to make a comment in person, please come up to the podium and then raise your hand online.
Lindy Owen again. I wanted to ask first on the agenda. I do not see that we had the consent agenda addressed. Did you? I didn't hear it approved. Did it just?
Yeah.
It was approved.
Yeah.
Whew, okay. I wanted to, on the executive director's report, wanted to say, Title 19 is being updated, supposedly corrected by the county, is it? Or is the Basin Management Committee involved in that? The word progressing is just means not much is being done. This is ridiculously taking way too much time. It was agreed at the original point of discovery that it wasn't adequate or correct. It was discussed that it could be done in a couple of weeks. So 2 years, whatever later, I'm still, that's progressing is not a nice word to hear. As far as the prioritization, I think we need to kind of, we're an adjudicated basin. It doesn't mean that we're okay. It doesn't mean that we're not in a critical situation. I think everything that we, you know, comes through this committee agrees that we are in critical overdraft. We are attempting to do something about it. So I'm not real happy with the fact that DWR can't bend a little bit. I just want to do a quick comment then because you didn't take public comment on the consent. The minutes.
We did take public comment and consent, so there was no comment. So I'm sorry you can't do that now.
Oh, okay. I will leave it at that. Thank you.
Hello, Becky McFarland again. I just want to thank you for the report and thank you, Matthew, for the clarification on that. How frustrating is that? Because we have that money could help us get out of critical overdraft. So that's just my comment. And I don't know, is there something citizens can do to say, hey, can you readjust what you're doing? Because we need that money to make things better. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have two comments online, starting with Larry. Please unmute yourself.
Hi, Larry Rayo here. I was a little disheartened by the progress of the Title 19 or the Los Osos Water Offset Study. I did go to the county website, and they state that the project schedule has been delayed due to difficulties in obtaining historic consumption data. Once this data is available, the estimated project timeline is 3 months. Updates will be posted on the websites as available. We were expecting a report by October. 3 months from now is way past October, and I don't understand, why they can't get the consumption data. It seems like the purveyors here at the BMC should be able to give them that, unless they're having a hard time getting the other 50% of the water that we have no idea about. Anyway, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then next, Patrick McGibney, please unmute yourself.
Thank you, Patrick McGibney. The sustainable yield was increased in 2016 to 2,760 acre feet yearly. In anticipation of additional water being available with the completion of certain programs, those programs still haven't been completed, and the extra water anticipated was never realized. The sustainable yield of 2760 was not a safe yield, and it overdrafted the basin even more. The lesson to be learned was only increase the sustainable yield after hard data shows safe increase in more water. Speculation and wishful thinking has proven not to work. The basin plan adopts a buffer of 20% so that the basin yield metric should not exceed 80% on the long-term basis. Such a balance can be achieved by either reducing the amount of annual groundwater production or by increasing the sustainable yield. Increasing the sustainable yield to 2760 with an extraction rate of 2,010 acre feet gave you a basin yield metric of 72. When in actuality, if you'd kept the sustainable yield at 2,400 acre feet yearly, as directed in the stipulated judgment, your basin yield metric would have been 84. Lowering the sustainable yield as you have done now to 2380, you would need a maximum extraction rate of around 1,900 acre feet yearly to meet the 20% buffer. The new reported extraction of 2,000 acre feet yearly is still above your 20% buffer at 84. So the basin is still being overdrafted by almost 100 acre feet yearly, or by 32,600,000 gallons. Increasing the sustainable yield would not appear to be the most responsible way to go. But I do see your dilemma. The basin plan says to keep the BYM under 80, which will indicate a margin of safety, implying that there's more water that can be used without overdrafting the basin. So increasing the sustainable yield could do that, but so could decreasing the extraction rate a bit further, and it seems that that would be a more prudent way to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick.
There are no more comments online.
Okay, then we'll close public comment and move on to the next item, which are the action items, nine, and we have three of them. The first one is 9A, presentation of the draft well modification and new monitoring well location, TM. In case anybody's wondering, where is that I'm wearing glasses, as I had cataract surgery. I'm not doing this to hide, so.
Thought it was Roy Orbison.
Thank you, Marshall. Yes, item 9A, presentation of draft well modification, new monitoring well location, TM. So the BMC had requested that the BMC's hydrogeologist, Cleith Harris geologist, prepare recommendations for how to improve the basin monitoring program to allow us to better monitor seawater intrusion within the Los Osos Basin. And, you know, so I think it's important to point out that the BMC monitoring program currently includes 93 wells, 43 of which are BMC member agency wells, 17 wells are municipal wells, and 33 or private wells. And I just bring that up to point out that that's a lot of wells for a basin our size. However, there are always opportunities to improve a monitoring program, and we want to constantly be doing that because seawater intrusion is such a critical issue in our basin. And so that's what's presented in this TM is recommendations for how we could improve that monitoring program. And included in the TM is recommendations both for modifications to existing wells. And as well as recommendations for installation of new monitoring wells. And as you might suspect, it's a lot cheaper to modify an existing well than it is to drill a brand new monitoring well. And so what I did in preparing for this meeting was an analysis of the amount of available funding that we might have this calendar year based on anticipated unspent funds and other items in the BMC's budget, and then compared that to the costs of the proposed well modifications and or new monitoring wells. In discussions with BMC staff, we feel that the best thing that we could do to improve the groundwater basin program would be to install a new monitoring well that could be utilized to replace the Rosina well, which is a key well in the chloride metric. However, as I described earlier, we didn't at the time identify that we potentially had enough funding to fund a new well with the anticipated funding we have left this year. And so here's two tables from the staff report that outline. First, in the top table is the estimated available budget for calendar year 2022 of $94,000. And then at the table below is the estimated cost of the monitoring well modifications of $109,000. So as you can see, there's not even necessarily enough money to be able to do all of the proposed well modifications. However, we could do two of the well modifications with the estimated remaining budget that we have for the rest of the calendar year. And so that's the recommendation that's included in the staff report, would be to utilize these unanticipated to be unspent funds. And we can go through the line items if the directors have questions to fund those modifications, because under our current budgeting and organizational structure, that money goes away at the end of the year. And so this could be an opportunity to leverage those funds. Having said that, we've recently found out, thanks to the diligent efforts of the CSD and its general manager, that there may be another funding source through the National Estuary Program that could provide additional funding to improve the Basin Management Committee's groundwater monitoring program, and potentially could provide sufficient funding that, when combined with the $90,000 anticipated to be unspent this year, could fund the construction of a new monitoring well in calendar year 2022. And so based on that information, now granted that is not finalized, this is very early preliminary information, I would recommend that the BMC direct staff to further investigate this additional funding source opportunity and allow us to hopefully cobble together enough funding to install a new monitoring well this year. And there may be potential opportunities in future years to collaborate with the National Estuary Program to install additional new monitoring wells. And I probably should have said this earlier. The well modifications will allow us to improve existing wells to become representative monitoring wells for Zone E, but won't allow us to improve our network for Zone D, just because of the specific physical characteristics of those wells and the modifications that we can make. However, with a new well, we can install a multi-completion well that will have dedicated screens in both Zones D and E, and hence provide the ability to monitor seawater in both zones. And that's why it's considered a higher priority. The other benefit of a new monitoring well is we get to choose where it is located. So we can put it in a spot, and Spencer has identified a number of spots for new monitoring wells. Shown on this graph, it's Site A skyline that are in close proximity to the Rosina well, and would be a very beneficial replacement monitoring well for the Rosina well in the chloride metric. So there's obviously a lot of technical detail included in the monitoring well or monitoring program improvement TM, and I can answer questions on those if you have it, but I think I'll stop there and look for direction from the BMC.
Okay, thank you. Questions before we go to public comment?
The new monitoring well that you described and the matching funds, we would still have to go through the same design environmental review. You mentioned getting that done in 2022. Do you think that's possible to do that? I mean, seems it took us almost 2 years to do our last monitoring well. So we had a pretty aggressive schedule at first, but then I think part of that was acquiring the land took a little, that took the bulk of it, and we may not have that today, right? Because that's part of county right away, right?
I'm not sure exactly where they're citing it, but I think the environmental work is much simpler because there's no extraction that's involved. Yeah. So it should be like drilling any other well, even easier because of no extraction.
Okay. Yeah, that was just my main question. Do you realistically think that we could do that in 2022? Because the other part of that comment would be, we approved the funding for environmental design this year and do some modification to a well, or you know, we don't want to lose the money. So we just use our money appropriately.
Yeah. Yeah. Good comments and good questions. Yeah. I think either way we go, we want to keep a path open to do as you described, is not lose advantage of this opportunity to improve our lower aquifer monitoring network. With installing a new well, this is again really pretty recent that we're considering this. So there's some additional homework that needs to be done to make, you know, to review what environmental and or other permits may be required. I think as Director Gibson points out, it's a monitoring well. So it's going to be a lot less, hopefully a lot less challenging than a production well. And we can target locations that are, I think, and the Skyline well is targeted at a location that is in existing county right of way. So it also helps with the ownership component. But yeah, we can bring more information on that. The other strategy that could be helpful in this, and at least in preliminary conversations with the CSD, and it was similar to how the other well was funded and constructed, they acted as the bank in a sense. And so they fronted the money to construct the well and then were reimbursed by the other parties. And so that provides a little bit of flexibility into the when the funds are encumbered or contributed to this. So if, you know, for example, if we could identify the location, get a timeline, select a contractor, you know, potentially pre-invoice the BMC parties for that and then pay the contractor within this calendar year. So there's some options there, but yeah, I would agree, Director Zimmer, that we need to take a closer look. And I would like to talk to some of those that were around when we constructed the last monitoring well that predates my role with the BMC and better understand what some of the challenges were associated with that schedule.
Anything else? Okay, we'll go to public comment.
If you'd like to make a comment online, please raise your hand and come up to the podium in person.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Again, my name is Jeff Edwards, and I certainly support an expanded monitoring network to really gauge how our basin is functioning, both the lower aquifer and the upper aquifer. Additionally, I'd like to see the committee endorse further efforts to monitor Broaderson and its potential effectiveness. The basin plan is relying on Broaderson functioning, and it's yet to be determined if that is going to. We're disposing of 450 to 500 acre feet at Broaderson, acre feet of water every year, and that's a lot of water. And we need to know as soon as possible how it's going to function, if it will. I think that is not so much a monitoring well, but transducers will help determine that effectiveness. And then coupled with the monitoring well network, something I've spoke to previously, and that is simply a database of all the existing wells, active and dormant, which would complement, I think, our monitoring well network. At the end of the day, there are perhaps hundreds or at least dozens of wells out there that are not being used and frankly should be abandoned. And so again, in addition to the monitoring well network, I think we ought to spend some time on looking at Broaderson and improving our ability to gauge that effectiveness, as well as a database, expanding the database of all wells in the community. Thanks.
Thank you.
Becky McFarland. I want to agree. I live right at the gate to the Broaderson site, and I'd like to know how well it's functioning, or if it is. I get asked by people all the time, like I'm supposed to know because it's right there in my backyard. But I agree with that. And to know how many wells we do have in this town. And we should be monitoring those and metering well so we know what's actually being pulled out. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, online, Patrick McGibney, please unmute yourself.
Thank you very much. And Dan, I think it'd be a great idea to get a new monitoring well that could replace the Rosina well right now that's being used. And I think I heard you say that you were questioning the accuracy or reliability of that well. And please correct me if I am mistaken, but that well is double counted on when you're trying to get the numbers for water level, fluorides, nitrates, that kind of thing. And I think it's the only well that actually showed improvement, but correct me on that, please. And if it is the only well that showed improvement, and if it is a questionable well, then I would take all those other numbers with a grain of salt. And I'd like to get your response on that. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Patrick.
There are no other comments online.
Okay, we'll close public comment and bring it back. Daniel, would you like to respond to those questions?
Yes, I would. So I think the specific questions that we got was, is the Rosina well double counted? And yes, the answer is the Rosina well is double counted in the chloride metric only. There was a question about the validity of that well. That well does unfortunately have borehole leakage, and so that it makes it more challenging to get representative samples from the lower aquifer because of that. And so again, the benefit and the recommendation for a new monitoring well that would be constructed and to avoid borehole leakage and allow us to get true representative samples of both zones D and zone E of the lower aquifer. With respect to of all the chloride wells that showed improvement, I don't know specifically. I'd have to dig into the third agenda packet item, but I would note that, you know, with the Rosina well and because of the potential for borehole leakage, Cletharis is very diligent about reviewing the water quality data that we get from that well, analyzing the different water quality constituents, specifically the nitrates, and selecting data points that are the most representative of lower aquifer water. In other words, you know, data points with the lowest nitrate concentrations in and around the time period that we typically monitor that well, which in this case it is the spring as monitoring event. And then it wasn't really a question, but the concept of the well database has been discussed with BMC staff, and we see a lot of validity or value in developing a comprehensive database, and have discussed considering, you know, it along with all the other priorities that the BMC has, but bringing it to the BMC for consideration as part of the calendar year 2023 work plan.
Okay, thank you. All right, bring it back to the committee for any more future, additional comments or questions.
I have a follow-up question on the transducer at Broderson. Didn't we have a project last year where we installed those, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I believe 9 transducers were installed right in around the Broderson area to allow us to collect continuous data on the improvements that we're seeing there. I think, again, there is a recommendation for a new Broderson monitoring well that would be a further improvement, because I think a lot of the wells in and around Broderson are upper aquifer, and so we're able to monitor the mound building in the upper aquifer, but it would be beneficial to be able to monitor the mound then building in the lower aquifer, which is what's envisioned directly. But yeah, in terms of near-term improvement in our ability to monitor Broderson, yes, a number of transducers have been installed. That data is included in the 2021 annual report and is showing positive impacts, increasing groundwater levels in and around Broderson.
Okay.
Thank you. Yep.
Charlie? Yeah, I have a question or maybe just a comment. I think I understand correctly that the proposal in item 9A is because of limited amount of budget remaining for this calendar year to only modify LA 14 and LA 16, according to the Cleith Harris technical memo. But it also states that the cost for modifying LA 14 and LA 16 is $78,000, and the item 9A proposal only identifies $50,000 that remains in the budget. So I don't know how the board could approve that. I know that you showed this table here briefly during your discussion. That's not included in the agenda package. It is?
Yeah, it is. It's at the very beginning. It's before the chart.
Page 23 of the consolidated.
Oh, I see it. I see it now. Yes. So that shows $94,000 of available funds. I see now. Sorry, I missed that. Out of for the $78,000 spending. Thank you for pointing that out. Let's see. If somebody else has a comment, I can come back. I'm trying to get back to the page where I've written my comments.
I don't think anybody else has a comment.
Well, so. I'm prepared to move, but if you still have questions, Charlie, we can certainly wait on that. I think we should move forward. Go ahead.
I think Dan's recommendation was to hold off now because of this new information. Is that correct, Dan? I know on your agenda you had recommendation or request of how to move forward with this, but now I think what I heard in your report is you were asking us to pause for a second till you get additional information. Is that correct?
Yeah. The original recommendation for this new funding source had was identified was to move forward with the well modifications. But the staff report also included the potential to provide alternate direction. So my recommendation at this point would be either to direct us to hold off or direct us to pursue this new funding opportunity and bring back future recommendations. I think either one would accomplish the same thing.
So I guess I would make a motion to fund what we currently can afford in the budget, these two wells, unless you wanted to wait and come back with another proposal for more.
My current recommendation would be to wait at this point, see if we can't further nail down this additional funding and come back with a recommendation for a new monitoring well. We will also strive to make sure that the well modification is still an option as well this year in case the other funding sources don't materialize or the timelines don't work out. But I think it's worth pursuing this additional funding source because of the added benefit.
So could we authorize the two modifications and give you authority to shift and move to the new monitoring well if that becomes available? I mean,
A new proposal, right? Not to allow that before that there's funds available for it, I hope.
Well,
what could I see if I can summarize? What I'm hearing from Dan is that the new monitoring well is more important than the well modifications, and you'd like to put our chips on a new monitoring well, which is taking the 94 we have, something coming from the National Estuary Program, and see if that can be put together to the 140 that it's going to take to do a new monitoring well, because that's well modifications. Those wells still act as monitoring wells. They may be imperfect, but they're useful. So I'm happy with that direction.
Thank you.
And if that doesn't pan, then we authorize them to move forward with the modifications.
Sure. I mean, that would provide maximum flexibility. I could get the authority to move forward with the modifications if the other.
I'm happy to add that, make that a motion, and let's see where we go.
Okay. Would you like to clarify that motion, please?
Sure. That we direct staff to pursue the creation, the installation of a new monitoring well using the funds available in the current budget plus funds that are potentially available from the National Estuary Program. If that path cannot be achieved because of the funding coming from the estuary program being insufficient, we'll authorize staff to pursue the well modifications, which can be accomplished under existing funds left in the budget.
Well, yeah, but we would do that when a new proposal comes in, or are you suggesting we authorize
them to do it? Because if the estuary program, as I understand it, is the only other possible source of funding, if it doesn't materialize or not in enough to get to a new monitoring well, then we go back and do the well modifications with what we have. Try again later.
Sounds like this needs a new proposal. I'm confused, frankly, about what you're suggesting. We're going to suggest they just go ahead and take the car keys and do what they think is best.
So staff is bringing a recommendation based on what they knew. In the staff report, it says we only have enough money to really do the well modifications. Right. That was their
two
well modifications, which would benefit the monitoring system. That's what they're recommending here. Since the staff report came out, discussions with the estuary program suggested there may be additional funds. And what Dan is suggesting is that if those funds are sufficient when combined with the $94,000 left in the budget, that he would see more benefit in a new, completely new monitoring well and not doing the well modifications. I'm fine with that. But to give him flexibility, then if the funding from the estuary program doesn't pan out, then let him go with what he's proposed here.
Yeah, I think that that's the key component that I was want to make sure is crystal clear. The MNEP funding, if that doesn't happen, then you're authorized to move forward with the modifications of 14 and 16.
Right.
Okay, if that's part of the motion, then yes. I think that's fine. Mm-hmm.
And then if more funding arrives, then there's permission to do something else also. Is that what the motion also includes?
We could clarify it by not to exceed the existing 2022 amount that he has listed here.
Certainly.
Well, we can't do that. I mean, we can't exceed that. So yeah.
We can wait until an August meeting. And I mean, that doesn't seem very far off to have a new proposal at the August meeting.
But one of my concerns just originally was the timing to get this done by the end of the year. And so that's why I was in favor of authorizing him to hit the pavement now and get working on it. Because if we wait till August and then he picks it up from there, we've just lost 30 days. So we know we have this funding available. We're just giving him two options to work with it. We can do what he has proposed, which is the not as beneficial as a new well, and that information wasn't available when he prepared the agenda. Now he has new information for a better option. We're giving him the flexibility to go after that better option. If that doesn't pan out, we're saying, well, then go ahead and do what you proposed in this report.
So you move forward. If you get the funding, you move forward with the new one. If you don't, you drop back to the 14-16.
I look forward to reading this motion in the meeting minutes during the August meeting.
That's why I was trying to make it clarified, yes. We'll see.
Did you get a second?
I'll second.
Okay. So we'll take it.
You want to do a roll call?
I don't think we need a roll call. Yeah. But, okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passed.
Okay, move on to item 9B. Presentation of the draft funding options. Technical memorandum.
Okay, I'll do that in a sec. Thank you, Marshall. Yes, item 9B, presentation of the draft funding options TM. So the stipulated judgment envisioned establishment of a formal funding mechanism for the BMC. However, as the BMC well knows, that more formal funding structure has not been implemented at this point. To assist in evaluating opportunities for funding a more formal structure, the BMC authorized the completion of a funding options TM, which is an updated evaluation of the different funding options available to the BMC and development of preliminary estimates of the magnitude of fees, assessment, taxes that would be required or that would enable establishing a formal funding mechanism, either for A, ongoing monitoring, and that should say management, which is what I characterize as kind of current BMC activities, or B, construction and operation of basin plan programs, which are, you know, were envisioned in the basin plan. And so that's what we're presenting to you today. This funding options TM is being provided as an informational item to the BMC to inform future decisions regarding organizational structure and funding program implementation. We're not looking for specific direction on this at this point. BMC staff is still reviewing the findings from this funding options TM and will bring forth more formal recommendations to the BMC at future meetings. But we wanted to bring this to the BMC and to the public. There's been a lot of interest in this study since it was initiated, and we wanted to share the good work and information that our consultant, SCI Consulting Group, and Ryan Ashton, who will be providing the presentation, that they have compiled for us. So with that, that's my preamble. I'll turn it over to Ryan, and bear with us, Ryan. I think I need to do some things here. Okay.
Thank you, Dan. I'll go ahead and share my screen. Can you see that all right?
Yep.
Okay. Good afternoon, members of the Los Osos Basin Management Committee. My name is Ryan Aston. I'm from SCI Consulting Group, and I am thrilled to be here today to provide a summary presentation of the funding options technical memorandum that Dan just described. I'm going to run through some various funding scenarios here today. I'll also be providing some funding models that can really kind of illustrate how certain rates and certain methodologies could generate certain amounts of revenue. I will pause at a couple points during the presentation. Some of these slides have a lot of information on them, and I want to be sure to give everyone a chance to ask specific questions. But of course, if anything pertinent comes up on any given slide, feel free to speak up and I'll do my best to address your question. So just to review here, the project goals for this were really to determine reliable long-term funding mechanisms. And we kind of looked at two sort of buckets in this regard. One is BMC administration, and the other is construction and operation and maintenance of capital facilities. And there are several reasons why we kind of separate funding needs into those two different buckets. The main one being that there are certain funding mechanisms that are more suited to one or the other. There are also certain funding mechanisms that can only fund one and not the other. So keep that in mind as we go through these here. The broad considerations that we try to use to evaluate these different options include equity, of course, efficiency or rather efficiency of administration, and then, of course, basin sustainability and community prosperity. We don't want to get too far away from those broad goals, which, of course, are key in making any sort of decisions related to funding. So to dig a bit deeper into that first bucket, at the direction of staff, we have modeled revenue needs here between $315,000, which I believe is about what you're spending now, up to $600,000. And then we have on the models, we'll show here in a moment, we have a mid-range as well, to give you kind of a good sense of what rates and methodologies could generate those amounts. A few notes here, BMC administration, as we refer to it, refers generally to the governmental administration of the committee. So required meetings and notification, basin monitoring, recording, analysis, reporting, and then any technical studies related to the above. But again, no capital projects are included in these revenue goals. That second bucket, as I mentioned, is capital costs. Now at the direction of staff, we have modeled revenue needs here based on the costs of infrastructure program B. And we have adjusted that one-time construction cost for inflation to come out to about $10.1 million and separated that from the annual O&M cost estimated to be about $450,000. Now I realize that infrastructure program B may not be determined to be the optimal infrastructure program or elements of various programs may be selected, but we felt that this provided a good benchmark in terms of revenue goals in order to kind of illustrate how you could get there, regardless of which infrastructure program or which elements of programs ultimately are decided upon. Another couple of things to mention here, of course, any grant funding could considerably lower these costs, and then that would in turn lower the local financial burden. And so that will be a key element of this as well, but we have modeled it at these numbers for now. Another thing to consider here, and I will dig deeper into this later in the presentation, is in terms of capital projects, are the purpose of those projects to serve the water needs of the existing community, or of potential new development. And I realize that new development is a polarizing subject and there are a lot of X factors and it is not determined what, if any, new development will take place. But later on, I'll show you how we've kind of broken this into some different scenarios that could serve various purposes, depending on what is determined to be the optimal path for the community down the line. Some other kind of general considerations here, or rather more specific considerations in terms of funding mechanisms. We have flexibility of methodology. Now, methodology often relates to equity in the sense that if a funding mechanism has a more flexible methodology available, you can really try to model it in a more equitable way, which of course is different for each community and scenario. So that type of flexibility lends itself to the ability to achieve a more equitable situation. We also have cost and timing of implementation. In terms of funding mechanisms, some are relatively inexpensive, while some are much more expensive. Some are relatively quick to implement and others take much more time. So that's another consideration there. Of course, revenue generation potential. You want to be sure that the mechanism that you select can achieve the revenue goal that you have. And then perhaps most important here, political viability and community acceptance. Obviously, it's extremely important to engage the community and get the community on board with any mechanism that is selected. This is particularly true of balloted funding mechanisms, but we believe strongly that it's almost equally as true for non-balloted mechanisms as well. Obviously, extremely important point there. And then legal rigor. You want something legally stout. You want something that can stand up to any potential legal challenges. You want to be sure that you are complying with various government codes and constitutional requirements regarding funding mechanisms. And I have here administration again. And to expand on that a little bit, you ideally want something that is not creating too much of a burden every year on staff in terms of updating it, that sort of thing. So that's another thing to keep in mind there. So the first thing I really want to discuss here is governance structure. And in discussions with staff, it came to our attention that the potential for a joint powers agreement for the Los Osos Area Subbasin has been discussed in the past, but that there are certain constraints and concerns over such a structure that have perhaps prevented it from being further explored. And so I'd like to share with you today a potential governance structure or JPA structure that could alleviate some of those concerns and I think provide perhaps an optimal pathway in terms of funding mechanism implementation, but it could perhaps assist the committee with other ventures as well. So the main concern or constraint that I believe has come up in the discussions we've had with staff revolves around the common powers constraints listed in Government Code Section 6505, which states that members of a JPA may only exercise powers common to all the contracting parties. And again, we believe that a uniquely structured JPA could potentially alleviate some of these concerns while still incorporating all BMC members. So to explain that in a little more detail here, A JPA could be formed by the County of San Luis Obispo and Los Osos Community Services Service District as signatory members. And then these two signatory members could appoint representatives of Golden State Water Company and S&T Mutual to the JPA board. In this scenario, we believe that powers common to the county and Los Osos Community Service District would then be viable for implementing funding mechanisms and other tasks necessary for implementing the plan. And Golden State Water and S&T Mutual would retain representation on the board, which of course would maintain consistency with the stipulated judgment. I realize that this is a little outside the box. This is not necessarily a traditional joint powers agreement structure, but there is some precedent here. This has been implemented in the Sacramento Central Groundwater Authority up in Sacramento County, where actually a different arm of Golden State Water is one of the non-signatory members. Somewhat similar situation up there where they had various member agencies with varying authorities to levy fees and taxes. Some of them were cities, counties, and others were water companies and the like. And so this is something they implemented in order to be able to exercise powers to the cities and county and have everyone still be represented on the board as well. I've prepared a kind of a simple flow chart here just to illustrate this again. Los Osos Community Services District and the county would form the JPA as signatories, and then they would appoint representatives from Golden State Water and S&T Mutual to the board. Then the JPA would implement the funding mechanism and collect the revenue, and then that would be used for basin plan implementation. One other thing to note here, in discussions with county legal counsel, it appears that the flood control district may be optimal here in terms of being involved from the county side. And so that's something that may come into play as well. One other thing I want to note is legally speaking, I think that you could probably establish an agreement that would ensure that this plan went according to plan, that representation would be kind of a make or break element. Obviously, it's important to ensure that there's representation for all member agencies in such a structure. So that kind of brings to a close that little section there on governance. I'll pause. I know this is, as I said, a little outside the box. If any of you have any questions, I'd be happy to address them.
One question regarding, you mentioned the flood control district being optimal. Can you expand on that? I caught it, but didn't understand it.
Of course, yeah. So in discussions with county legal counsel, there was a feeling that because the flood control district and its enabling act specifically is granted the authority for taxing purposes for water management in the county and including the basin area, that may be kind of the optimal authority to use, that authority granted by the enabling act. And so I do think that this is something that warrants more discussion and it hasn't necessarily been exactly determined, but that was a concern from county council that I wanted to be sure to note is that enabling act grants this specific authority.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. Okay, I'll go ahead and move on here. So next, I want to dig a bit deeper into that first bucket I described, which is funding BMC administration. And we have identified as perhaps the more optimal choice here, which would be a special tax, or more specifically, a special parcel tax. There's a lot of things we like about a special tax in this scenario. I'll kind of dig into the details here. More broadly, a special tax provides revenue that is eligible to fund a wide range of BMC activities. So once a special tax is passed, that revenue is quite flexible in terms of what it can fund. It does require two-thirds support of registered voters, which can be a bit of a hurdle. It is expensive, relatively speaking, and can take a long time to implement, as much as 1 to 2 years. But there are a lot of things we like about it. And one of them is that because of the potential methodologies that can be used for a parcel-based special tax, you can attempt to allocate cost relative to water use. And so you see some examples there. Residential properties could be charged based on residential units. Commercial properties could be charged based on built square footage. Ag and open space charged based on acreage, and those could be different rates. Obviously, those two types of property use different amounts of water. And then other properties such as vacant or parking or storage properties could be charged a lower flat rate. You could also approach this with more uniform rates as well. And I'm going to show you a couple models that kind of compare and contrast those two approaches in just a moment. I will say one other thing that we like about a special tax in this situation is that I think it would allocate costs to all water users in the plan area, which is something that I think can lend itself to the concept of equity as well. So this first model I want to show you here is a special parcel tax. And this is kind of that tiered structure that I described a moment ago. Bear with me, please. I know there are a lot of numbers on that screen. But you'll see at the bottom, there are hypothetical revenue goals. And that's that $315,000 up to the $600,000 with that mid-range of $450,000 in the middle there. And so you can see that the residential properties near the top of the image there are charged per residential unit. So you have from 45 up to 65 and then up to 85 on the high end. You have other properties down below, parking and storage, a flat rate of 25 up to 50. Ag based on acreage, timber and pasture a lower acreage rate. And so you can see how these rates would generate that amount of revenue. Now, relatively speaking, these are not particularly high rates, but they're also not particularly small. I think this is something that, it really depends on the community. And so something like this, the viability of it really depends on engaging the community and determining whether there would be support for this kind of mechanism. But again, I think that you can really model this in a way that that lends itself to the concept of equity. These rates are, of course, just kind of preliminary, just to illustrate this. They can be, altered if new information comes to light or if a better understanding is come to in terms of what would work optimally.
Ryan, just for a point of clarification that was helpful for me when reviewing this for the first time, those are per year rates.
They are annual rates. I should have.
That is an annual rate, not a monthly rate, which is you a lot of times see rates displayed as. So $45 to $85 per year per single family residential unit.
Yes. Thank you, Dan. That is a good point of clarification. Yes, these would most likely be placed on the property tax bills. That's the most common method of collecting special taxes such as this, and it would be an annual rate. So next I'll show you, as I mentioned, a different approach that uses a more uniform rate. And I say uniform, but there are two different rates here. So you could also do this in a manner where you charged developed parcels, all developed parcels, regardless of use or type, one flat rate, and then vacant or undeveloped parcels, a lower rate. And so you see with those same revenue goals here, for developed from 55 up to 80, up to 105, gets you to those numbers, and then for vacant from 30 up to 40, and then 50 gets you those numbers. Now for something like this, I think that the positive here is that it may be easier to convey, easier to explain to the public. It's definitely easier to understand. But I do think that it perhaps has the potential to be less equitable. You can see here that for a small home on a half an acre would be charged the same as a 10 acre farm. And so you have the potential here for there to be a little less equity. But again, it's simpler, easier to convey, and the rates aren't terribly different, but they are to some degree. So moving on here, I did want to touch on some of the alternative mechanisms that we really dug into here. The first one is a regulatory fee program. And initially, this was really what we saw as perhaps the optimal path. But in discussions with legal counsel and staff, it became clear that given the lack of a traditional governance structure in this basin, there may not be a clear path forward. It is unclear what member agency, if any, has the authority to implement a regulatory fee program in the sub-basin. There are a lot of things we like about regulatory fees. They are commonly used in Sigma basins up and down the state. Of course, GSAs are granted by Water Code Section 10730 the authority to implement these fees, and that's not the case here. But given again the governance structure here, it is unclear if there would be a path forward. But they're inexpensive to implement; they're relatively quick to implement, They would likely be a charge based on acre feet drawn. And so all water users in the basin, either directly or indirectly, would pay under such a program. But again, not a clear path forward, we feel, at this time. They are something I think it would be pertinent to keep in your back pocket, perhaps, if something were to change or if new information were to come to light, that may be another option. Some other perhaps less optimal choices here would be a property-related fee program. Property-related fee would look and feel in some ways similar to a regulatory fee, but also suffers from those same drawbacks I just mentioned. A few other differences, there's a slightly more comprehensive implementation requirements for property-related fees, but they can also fund capital projects as well as administrative costs, whereas regulatory fees cannot fund capital projects. And then I also have listed here benefit assessments, which are more complex. There are strict proportionality requirements in terms of benefit assessments. There's also, I believe, a potential lack of a clear underlying act justifying their use for groundwater management. However, they have been implemented by a few groundwater basins out in the Central Valley. And so that's something I just kind of wanted to mention here as well for you to keep in mind too. So that kind of concludes the BMC administration portion. I can move on unless anyone has any questions about this section. Okay. We'll go ahead and move on to that second bucket that I described, which is funding capital facilities. And for this, we have identified perhaps the most optimal mechanism to be Mellaroo's Community Facilities District Special Taxes, or CFDs as they're commonly called. Now, CFDs are far more flexible than traditional special taxes or many other funding mechanisms. And because of that, they can be more optimal in many ways. They are also more complex. So there are a lot more options, which really kind of brings about more detailed discussion and more decision-making, really. One thing I will note is that revenue generated by CFDs may not fund BMC administration. The government code specifies a list of services that CFDs can fund, and groundwater management is not one of them. However, that code also lists construction and operation and maintenance of real property as something that they can fund. And so that is where this would fall in here. So these are not a mechanism that could fund BMC administration, but they could fund construction and operation and maintenance of basin facilities. As I mentioned, there's great flexibility with CFDs in terms of the rate and method of apportionment. They're adaptable to changes in development plans. And so many communities use them partly for that reason, because as you go through various development processes, there are often changes, there are often a lot of X factors. And CFDs are flexible, which serves that purpose well. Another thing to mention here is CFDs are fairly often used to secure land secured financing. And so that is something that could potentially come into play here. They are an optimal mechanism for purposes such as that as well. And you see those two bold underlined bullet points down at the bottom. So the first one, registered voter election. This is one way that a CFD election can go. And this is if there are 12 or more registered voters which reside within the boundaries of the CFD. In this case, like a special tax, two-thirds approval of those registered voters is required. This would most likely be the scenario if a CFD were to be formed on the existing community. In turn, the other method here occurs when there are less than 12 registered voters within the proposed boundaries. In this case, two-thirds approval of landowners is required. And the way that is done is one vote per acre or portion thereof. So this would be the most likely scenario for a CFD on new development, given that in newly developed parcels, there very well might likely be less than 12 registered voters residing on those parcels. Again, I know this is kind of a lot of information here, and I'm going to dig a bit deeper into each of these paths. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, one of the considerations here is, would new capital infrastructure in the basin be needed to serve the needs of the existing community or of potential new development or both? And so I'm going to break down kind of these two different choices, the way you could form a CFD on one or the other or both. So a CFD formed to include the existing community again, would require two-thirds support of registered voters within the proposed boundaries. And one thing that, we came across here in discussions with staff is that due to the flexibility of, CFDs, you could have a, more complex tiered structure than a traditional special tax. And one interesting idea that came up was to assign a different rate to parcels that pay the sewer assessment than the parcels that don't. And I think this came out of discussion that parcels paying the sewer assessment have contributed perhaps more financially to basin infrastructure already. So this next model, and again, bear with me, I know this has even more numbers up on the screen, but this next model kind of breaks down the properties within the basin into two categories. And that top table is parcels that pay the sewer assessment, while the bottom table is parcels that do not. And so you can see here that between the low range and the high range, on the top, there are lower rates between 50 and 100 for residential properties annually, and between 100 and 150 for residential on the bottom annually. And you can see at the bottom highlighted in green, these rates would generate about 380,000 up to about 715. So this is something that could potentially, you know, pay for the operation and maintenance of, basin facilities. It could also pay for, construction costs as well. Again, these are all very preliminary numbers. You know, we get excited to be able to, explore these options. We get to be a little creative and, come up with, different numbers. But of course, you know, you can plug different numbers in here based on different different scenarios and, different considerations, and really kind of try to get a gauge for what rates and in what manner and method of apportionment can generate specific amounts of revenue. So next, I want to turn to a CFD formed on new development. So again, this would require two-thirds support of landowners within the proposed boundaries, with 1 acre equaling one vote. And in this case, the CFD boundaries for the formation would be one of two things. And one is either all developable lands, or the territory of a first development project or projects, and then the adoption of future annexation areas as you go along. And I feel that the second option here would perhaps be more viable in this scenario, given that development, if it takes place, is more likely to happen kind of bit by bit and may look more like a checkerboard as opposed to big housing tracts. And so one way you could do this is to start with a certain amount of properties, and then you could annex more as you go along. So again, a couple more options here, a lot of flexibility here, but in turn, a lot more things to consider as well. In terms of a CFD formed to include new development, we have even more options to discuss here. And that's between these two options here. Now, one is a facility special tax or an annexation tax. Now, this would look and feel similar to a development impact fee in some ways. This would be a one-time special tax that would be levied at the time of map approval or building permit issuance, to represent new development's fair share of the construction of basin facilities. So this would be a lump sum due upon development. The second option there, described as an annual services special tax, would be levied on newly developed parcels within the CFD. And this would be an annual charge that as these homes became lived in homes, those property owners would pay this annually on their property tax bill. You could do one or both of these. We've modeled both of these for you to kind of illustrate what the numbers could do. But again, these are just some options to keep in mind here. So that first one, the annexation special tax. Again, this is a one-time lump sum. You'll notice that number 1844, that was taken from the Los Osos Community Plan, which I realize is pending approval from the Coastal Commission and is not necessarily close to being fully considered or implemented. But we wanted to use that number just as a baseline number to show you what rates at those numbers could generate what revenue. And you see here that a rate of 5,500 per newly developed residential unit could generate about $10.5 million in total. Going up to 7,000, you get to about $13.5 million there. So this is something, you know, we modeled it at the 10.1 revenue goal because this is something that could potentially fund the construction of infrastructure program B or similar endeavors. Turning back to that annual services tax, which again would be something that as these homes became lived in, the property owner would pay annually in newly developed parcels. You have that same number there in terms of residential units, and you can see that a rate of 225 gets you to about 450 per year. Going up to 300 gets you to over 600,000 a year. And so this was modeled in a sense to show you how this kind of charge could pay for the annual operations and maintenance costs of expanded basin facilities. Similarly to how I went over alternatives for funding BMC administration, I want to do that here as well for capital facilities. And I briefly mentioned development impact fees before. There are a few things to note in terms of differences here between a CFD on new development and development impact fees. One is that development impact fees require land use authority to implement, and so they would likely be implemented by the county. And this is another thing that that we touched on with county legal counsel in our discussions that may not be optimal for that reason, because it's something that could not necessarily be jointly implemented. And for that reason, it may be less optimal. It would likely have to be a county endeavor. And for that reason, we feel the CFD might be more well suited to the BMC's needs. Another thing to mention here is development impact fees are not as optimal in terms of securing land secured financing. I do not know whether or not that would come into play, but if it were to come into play, a CFD is better suited for that kind of financing than development impact fees are. And I mentioned here as well, benefit assessments, because they again are flexible, they can fund administrative costs or capital, but for the same reasons, they're perhaps less optimal for BMC administration. They're also perhaps less optimal here. Lack of a clear underlying act supporting their use for groundwater management, and just a higher degree of complexity in terms of the proportionality requirements and the implementation procedures. That pretty much wraps us up here. Just some things we consider potential next steps to close us out. Obviously, refine the funding strategy. And within that, I think you need to engage the community or continue to engage the community and continue to engage key stakeholders. And consider developing a strategy for a potential JPA structure. And as I mentioned within that, the inclusion of all BMC members and their representation, and then specifically a structure that serves potential special tax implementation or potential CFD implementation as well. One more thing to mention as well here is to consider a public opinion survey. A public opinion survey could help to determine what rates might be viable. It could also help to determine what methodologies are preferred by the community, if any, as well as other areas of focus or concerns that the community has as well. That concludes the presentation today. I'm happy to answer any questions or participate in discussion. I also just want to note that it's been a pleasure working with staff over the last 8 months or so. And we really enjoyed this project, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate your presentation there. As the BMC and others can see, obviously, there's very, very complex, topic here with lots of different options and alternatives, but Ryan, I think you did a very good job of trying to make it as clear as possible, and so this would be very helpful. The other thing that I found it very beneficial to hear Ryan's presentation before reviewing the TM as kind of a primer, and so that's why, again, the way we're bringing this forth as an informational item, just to start introducing these concepts to the BMC for future consideration.
Thank you. Do we have any questions?
No. Comments, but no questions.
Okay, we'll go to public comment then.
If you'd like to make a comment online, please raise your hand or come up to the podium in person.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I did want to speak to item 9B. The tech memo that you've just received regarding funding and governance. You may remember that I objected to this when it was authorized. Los Osos is simple. We don't need a complex system. We need to keep it simple. I've read the 50 pages, and really, it's nothing but an exercise. We've seen some of this before.
And frankly, this should not be a staff priority. Let's put a stake in its heart today, please. It's consumed enough staff time, enough dollars, not to mention base and party staff and their time. The takeaway is simple. As I mentioned, Los Osos is simple. We don't need a complex funding or governance structure to effectuate the basin management programs. Much of the report spoke to funding basin management committee administration. A lousy $300,000 a year. Why are we even talking about it? If the county doesn't want to participate, they can exit. No problem. They don't want to pay their 20%. That's okay. But we don't need a JPA. You've heard about reasons for the JPA to get into the pockets of the domestic well owners. Well, I would submit to you, it's going to cost more to get into their pocket than you're ever going to get out. By the way, on page 27 of the tech memo, it summarizes the number of wells. The water purveyors have 13, and these probably aren't exact, but they're close. The ag wells in the entire valley are 15. We're not going to get meters on those wells, so drop that. There are 4 community wells and 214 domestic wells. I think there are actually fewer than that in operation. So the idea of getting into their pockets is a non-starter. The idea that we need this for the construction and operation of projects. Well, that's why we have rates and charges from the individual purveyors. And we, at some point, will have development impact fees. That will round it out. We don't need a community financing district. We don't need that either. And there's reference to the ISJ and how it mentions governance. Well, didn't compel us to do anything. There's just a suite of options for governance if we want them. Taxation, that's a non-starter. This community has $190 million of debt associated with wastewater recycling facility at $200 a month. And Mr. Chairman, if I may have another minute, two-thirds vote, that's never going to happen.
Jeff, could you wrap it up,
please? I'd be happy to. So let's file this a report. Let's not spend any more time on it. And we certainly don't need any branding, as mentioned in the report. Just a little bit. Maybe we want to brand it. We in Los Osos, we like salt on the rim.
Okay, Jeff.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen again. I kind of agree with Jeff on this. I think simple is totally doable for our community. We have 3 purveyors, and we have the county in charge of private wells and ag water usage, 50%. I was kind of looking at currently the LOCSD and Golden State contribute 38% of the cost of running the basin management. The county pays 20%, and S&T does 4%. Those are pretty much seem reasonable. But my question is, where does the county get that money from? Is that from the general fund? The users of 50% of our water pay nothing, have no restrictions, requirements. So I'm just curious, are we double paying? Is this coming out of our tax revenue that we pay for property taxes? And then it funds the CSD to have their 20%. And it was also very confusing to see the options. I think I would have preferred to see here's a JPA, here's a special parcel tax. But as it broke down at the end, CSD special taxes, the benefit assessment, and using data from something that is not going to be approved to say that it would be $5,000 impact fee per household, all developable land or annexation area. That's way too complex. I think that we can go a much simpler method. What we have is a basin that we're trying to manage, and we're trying to charge equitably for every user in the basin. Currently, all water purveyor customers, no, all sewer people that pay for the sewer are paying an exorbitant amount of money, almost $200 a month, to put in a sewer to clean the water for the other 50% of the people that pay nothing. So if you want to get equitable, let's do something about what the county's responsibility is in getting monitors on those wells, having that program funded so we can actually see how much water is being taken out of our basin on a daily basis, because currently we're running a system that doesn't have data and it's pretty simple to get it. Thanks.
Thank you, Lindy.
There are no comments online.
Okay, thank you. We'll close public comment and bring it back to the committee for any comments. Mark, did you have something?
Yeah, I have a couple of comments. Just overall, good report. You know, in my mind, this is a significant pivotal dealing with our committee. It was something that when the ISJ and our committee was developing, we talked about a funding mechanism. So I think it is important to go through this exercise, flesh it out, and determine if this is something that the community will support or not. This effort was extensive. Like I said, we've been talking about doing this for a long time. I think we should keep it alive and at least get to the point where we hear from all of the community whether they're going to support this or not. And one of the things that I didn't see in the report that I would have liked to have seen is just what are those next steps look like as far as funding? I mean, ultimately, this committee is going to have to pay for that. And so, you know, this big elaborate branding, I don't think we want to go into that depth of it. But how do we come to some level where we get a good sense to make a decision on whether to keep moving forward or not is really what I would have liked to see. Is that going to cost us, you know, $5,000 or $500,000? And so looking at those next steps, you know, the two types of special tax and the CFD, that made sense to me. And I would like to see that move forward. But if we are spending serious dollars to chase pennies, it may not be worth it either. So hearing from the public and a better understanding of what the cost is to move forward with this, then we can determine if it's likely to succeed and is it worth chasing that money, or is that money better well spent investing in capital and monitoring. Those are the other two key aspects of this committee. One of the things, just for clarification on, I know it was just for discussion, but we identified Program B projects, and I don't think it's the intention that our goal is to move forward with Program B projects, but that was just more for an illustration. When my first read of it, I didn't catch that, and I didn't know where Program B was really coming from, but I think Ryan explained that, and I understood it better in his presentation, as you mentioned, Dan. And then just a couple of the numbers when I was going through that report as far as Program B. We operate a ion exchange upper aquifer treatment, and the cost may not have been what we actually see in reality. I think it's a little more expensive than that, at least the O&M cost. So may want to consider that in the report. I think that's about it for my comments. Okay, so next steps, what do we do? How do we, what kind of funding is a requirement, and what are we looking at?
Thank you, Mark.
All right.
Yeah, I agree with what Mark says and his interest in seeing the path forward. I also want to say that this was a good spend for the BMC, and I appreciate the effort that went into this. This is an important project, and it really speaks more to how we would fund basin projects during a build-out scenario, really. And this really is necessary. I appreciate all the efforts.
Thank you. Bruce?
Yeah, I think this is an important first step. Bring it back. We knew these different mechanisms. I think we have a couple of things to discuss as we go forward and a work plan to build for next year. So I think it would seem obvious we direct staff to continue this discussion. One of them is to handle a discussion of the governance structure, which is important. This is this new form of JPA. I understand that there is an example of it that this is based on and gets asked for a presentation item and a little bit of a description of that could be circulated within each party to the BMC. Have separate conversations with Dan, see how that works. Second thing is, I think we should ask staff to develop perhaps a couple of different options within what's been discussed in this report to show us, just lay out a couple of scenarios and again, walk them through individual members of the BMC and have have a variety of items between now and the end of the year. What I see happening is we should probably build into next year's budget a work plan that is going to take this on, move this forward. I think, in fact, polling is an important aspect of this as we craft how this goes. That is a statistically significant way of gauging public sentiment about this. I think the public does need a little more information. I don't think most members of the public understand the function of this body and the importance of it and the necessity of complying with the adjudication and necessitarianism is what that's based on, Mr. Chairman. So
thank you.
And you will be rid of me soon, as I do have a hard stop at 3:30. I'm going to ask my alternate, Dr. Reilly, to take over when this item is done. But that's generally seems obvious to me. That's what we should direct staff to do.
Thank you. Yep. Oh, and that was one of the things I was going to point out. Kate Ballantyne is no longer his alternate, but in the presentation, it did show Kate Ballantyne.
In that, because it was commissioned, I think, right. When Kate was.
Yeah, when I talked about the staff.
Welcome. Blaine is the department head of the Department of Groundwater Sustainability, which is mostly focused on.
Well, he sat with us before.
Yeah, so. Okay. So he's well known. Good. Yeah.
I think one of the things that, everybody's agreeable on is that we need to have a work program for this. Is how we're going to move forward with this, and we need to have a budget with it so we can say, okay, here's what we want to do, A, B, C, and D, and here's what it's going to cost to do that, because I don't want to go down a path where we're spending a ton of money if, in fact, nobody's comfortable with doing that. So I think we need to have a work program with the budget, bring that back to us, and we can say, yes, we're agreeable to that. Let's move forward with that approach to this thing. I think that, in my opinion, from what I've heard, that seems like the next step.
Yes, and I think also it encouraged staff to begin talking about the budget for fiscal year 2023 as soon as possible.
This would be a key component of that.
Yes.
And I would bet staff has received direction as part of the conversation here, and perhaps no more formality to that is necessary.
Yeah, well, I don't think we're going to have a motion here, but I think that's my summing up of what I've heard. So I think if we're all agreeable to that, then we can move on to the last item on the agenda.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Thank you for that direction. What we've talked about at staff is, again, obviously bringing more concrete recommendations and really options, I think, as you described, Chair Hohilski, is what I've envisioned is somewhat of a flowchart approach with kind of key decision milestones highlighted, as well as costs associated with those decision points. For example, polling could be a viable next step. We can get estimates for what we think polling would cost and then provide that. But then also chart out the future path too. If polling is favorable and we want to go to a vote, what would be the cost associated with the vote, and which it also would be another.
Yeah, I think a complete work program, like a flow chart kind of thing with intermittent costs, would be a great way to bring that back. Okay, so with that, then we'll move on to item 9B, or pardon me, C. The draft spring 2022 lower aquifer groundwater basin monitoring results. Recommendation is to receive the update. So we'll turn it over to you, Dan.
Thank you, Chair Ohilski. So yes, what we have here is an early look at the monitoring data from the spring monitoring events. So our spring 2022 lower aquifer basin monitoring results. You know, what I've included in the presentation here is, you know, the tools that the BMC uses to aggregate that data and track the health of the basin relative to specifically seawater intrusion in these graphs. And so what we're showing here are the graphs that we've all seen many times of the chloride and the water level metrics from the basin. Those, the monitored data is shown as the solid lines, chlorides in red, water level in blue. The dashed lines show how it was envisioned to the best that they could when the basin plan was developed, that these metrics would track with the implementation of the basin plan and most specifically implementation of the urban water reinvestment program, which is the capture and treatment of wastewater and disposal at the Broderson site, which is a key component of the basin management committees and the party's strategy for preventing and combating seawater intrusion. So looking at the latest data points on the graphs here, what we are seeing is a improvement in the conditions relative to the previous observations. With the chloride metric, what we're seeing and what I characterize as an oscillation of the chloride metric, going up at certain times, going back down at certain times, which I have characterized as a positive sign that, you know, a first objective with seawater intrusion is to stop it from intruding further inland. And this data supports an interpretation that through the actions, the extensive conservation actions and the urban water reinvestment program and the implementations of programs A and C, that the BMC and the parties have been able to halt seawater intrusion from intruding further. The other metric is the water level metric. What we're seeing is a slow but incremental increase in water levels in the wells that make up that metric. Again, this is a positive sign as we are trying to, you know, increase the water levels in the lower aquifer metric up towards the target of 8 feet. As you can see from this graph, you know, it wasn't envisioned that we would reach that target immediately upon implementation of the basin plan. It was going to take time, and that's what we're seeing. And we're tracking a little behind those estimates that were provided in the basin plan, but we are still continuing to see a consistent long-term upward trend in water levels, which is also a positive sign for basin management. And I would characterize that even more in that we're seeing a continued upward trend in water levels during a period of historic drought. I think if you compare these water levels with water levels that are being observed in many other basins in California during these historic drought conditions, these are much more positive than what we may be seeing elsewhere, where basin levels are continuing to drop. So that's kind of my presentation and interpretation of the results that we have here for everyone today. It's important to point out, though, that, you know, these are metrics, they're aggregations. I don't know if that's a real word, Marshall. You can correct me on that. Of multiple data points. And it's important when we analyze seawater intrusion and other basin conditions that you also look at the individual data points, because seawater intrusion can be very localized. There are what we describe as seawater intrusion tends to occur in preferential pathways, where you can have seawater intrusion occurring in one portion of the basin and you can progress north or south and not see that same seawater intrusion. That, an excellent example of that is the Palisades well. The LOCSD Palisades well saw seawater intrusion in its zone E portions. That well was, the lower portions of that well were sealed off to prevent further pumping from zone E at that location. But it was observed. However, if you go down the street on Palisades, which, as those of you familiar with the community, is not a very long street, a couple of blocks, there's a monitoring well in Zone E that doesn't show any signs of seawater intrusion in Zone E. So again, it can be localized. And so that's for, it's important to look at the individual data points. And those are provided in the agenda packet as well. And one observation from those data points is that is less than positive is we are seeing an increase in chloride concentration at the Pasadena monitoring well, which is at the northern portion of the basin. And so that is something that the Basin Management Committee staff is tracking very closely. And speaking with Cleve Harris geologists, one thing they did note that while the chlorides did increase, the water levels did increase as well. So positive sign on the water levels, negative sign on the chlorides. And something we will continue to monitor. And the other reason I want to bring that, or the other consideration around that, as I described in the status of basin plan programs, is the CSD is very close to being able to turn on its upper 8th Street aquifer well, which is the closest production, well, one of the closest production wells to that monitoring well where we're seeing those increases. I'm hopeful that with that upper well and the ability to reduce lower aquifer pumping from that portion of the basin, that we can start to see again a halting or an improvement of chloride concentrations in that portion of the basin as well. But only time will tell.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions before we go to public comment?
Just a quick question on the the projection of the water level in the chloride. Can you refresh? Do you know how those were, that was created? I mean, it happened a long time ago before you came on board, but I can't reflect back on what, how those were created. Is it based on the modeling or?
Yeah, so those projections were not directly based on the modeling. As if we've talked quite a bit, you know, the current model we have is a steady state model. And so these projections I would characterize as developed more analytically, you know, based on the best available information and knowledge that we had of the basin, observing historic trends in these parameters and taking outputs and findings from the model to inform those analytical analyses, these projections were developed. That is why, you know, I continue to advocate for, and the BMC is pursuing a transient model. That would be a much better tool for making these future projections, being able to predict groundwater basin conditions year over year out into the future, based on obviously assumptions that we make. But the parties that were involved developed these projections with the best tools they had at the time.
Thank you. Okay, we'll go to public comment, please.
You have a comment online, please raise your hand and come to the podium in person.
Lindy Owen again. So how old are these analytical, this modeling? Is it just carried over from 7 years ago and, or is it updated? I find it odd at Pasadena that both water and chlorides have increased. Does that mean that chlorides were coming in and then water blended with them? Anyway, just curiosity. I keep hearing that we can stop seawater intrusion, but I don't understand how that's possible to push back an ocean. When you say that there's little patterns of areas that got saltwater intrusion and other areas look completely freshwatered still, it does mean that they're intruded. That means that they're permanently, as best as I can tell, they're not going to return to holding drinking supply in the near future. So it just means that I think saltwater intrusion is not being pushed back very well. And that means that we have less capacity for future water. And, when we look at these charts, they're being touted as showing that everything's looking rosy, when I don't necessarily feel comfortable with something that's developed analytically and was based years ago. I'd feel more comfortable knowing that there were updates going on. And again, I don't see how we're able to do any monitoring without having 50% of the basin included.
Thank you, Lindy.
I have one other quick question. How many years away before we think that we might reach the 8-foot level that keeps seawater intrusion away? I want to know years why.
Thank you.
I can't see that far.
Okay. After we get done, Lindy, they'll answer your question.
Becky McFarland again, that dang presbyopia or whatever we get. I had some questions or statements. So the levels are not as bad as elsewhere, but still not good. I mean, yeah, we're doing something, but our chloride levels are supposed to be 100 milligrams per liter or lower. And I'm assuming that's for safe potable water, but we're at 202, and that's an improvement over 205 the year before. So that doesn't sound great to me. And the water level again, 2.1 above sea level, it's supposed to be at least at 8. S&T's, was it individual data points? What are their nitrate and chloride levels? We're mixing this all together. So at my house on Broderson might be good, but if I'm living over in Sunset Terrace and Monarch Grove, what are the chloride levels in their drinking water? Those are important questions, because we can't ignore those neighbors over there. A lot of them are my friends, so I'm speaking up for them. Thank you.
All right, we have two comments online. Emily Megans, please unmute yourself.
Hi, and Dan, this isn't directed specifically at you, and I don't know how.
Emily, could you please speak up? I'm sorry, we can't hear you too well.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me? Hello. Can you hear me? No,
that's an improvement. Yes.
Okay. So I just, this isn't directed at you, Dan, but it's just more in general across the boards. And I want to say my, what's concerning, my husband's a very senior hydrogeologist by training for one of the world's largest sciences firm. And, you know, he keeps looking when I can get 5 minutes of his time, because he's working on an important federal program right now, including getting you all your vaccines and therapeutics, because he's that good at data. And he keeps looking at the BMC kind of charts and what's, you know, proffered out there. And he boils it down really basically. And so two comments are that the BMC and the hired consultants, and both my husband and I know what it's like to be a hired consultant for government. in a sense, you're really misleading people with the 2021 chloride metric and what we're seeing in 2022 in this discussion, which is that essentially the measurement hasn't really changed from 2020 and it's higher than 2019. So you can parense it as, you know, an improvement, but in the big picture, it is not. And, you know, the screenshot that is shown to us publicly of the CHG Los Osos Basin metrics, it's showing an improvement in parentheses. And it's like a, my husband says, like a parent consoling a child who's flunked the last 3 years of school saying, quote, well, you got 49% this year, honey. It's better than last year's 48%. So it's just something to take back. I mean, we're not all just citizens and ratepayers and everything else. We actually care about our basin. And I do understand what it's like to be a federal, state, and local county contractor. And I know that there's pressures, but I'd like to see real talk, and so would my husband, as citizens living here in Los Osos. Thanks.
Thank you.
There are no more comments online.
Okay, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the...
Sorry, one hand just came up as I said that.
Okay, we'll let that person speak.
Okay. Patrick McGibney, unmute yourself.
Thank you. Could you put that graph back up on the screen, please, for me?
Yeah.
All I see is my timer going off. I don't see the graph anywhere.
We have to.
We're working on it, Patrick.
Can you start my time over also, please? All right. Let me, there we go. Okay, there we go. Thank you. So I'd like to see a trend in our chloride metric here before we start making any judgments about things are improving or not improving. That graph right there shows LA10 double weighted, giving us some chloride information. And we've already been talking about the fact that that's unpredictable and unreliable. And we're going to hopefully change that well out. So I'm not really looking at any trends going on in here, just up and down. We haven't really done a lot of improvement, it doesn't seem to me. And I guess a lot of other people feel that way too. As far as the water level goes, it seems to me that sometime not too many years ago, there was a TM that Spencer did that said, actually, the water level should be 12 feet and not 8 feet to really stop seawater intrusion. And I'm just wondering, Dan, do you have that memo or have you read that? Do you know what I'm talking about on that? Or am I completely off base on that one? So if we really do need 12 feet in there, we're all a long ways off. I mean, even at 8 feet, we're a long ways off. So, yeah, I like your comment on that. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Patrick. So with that, then we'll close public comment.
We have an additional hand now.
Oh, we'll keep public comment open.
All right. Eve Gruntfest, you may unmute yourself.
Are we okay?
Yes, we
can hear you.
Can
you hear me now?
Yep.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear
can
you.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you.
You can't hear me.
She can't hear
we
us.
We can't hear you.
She can't hear us, apparently.
Yeah. Eve, you're muted still.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I seem to be having some problem with my microphone. I don't know why. All right, well, forget it then. I'll do it later. If you can't hear me, I can't do it. Yes.
All right. Now can we close public comment?
Correct. We have no more public comment online.
All right. We'll close public comment and bring it back to the committee. This item is just an update on early findings. So if you have any questions, now is your chance to ask. If not, this will be coming back at a later date.
Yeah, we will be bringing fall measurements when they're available around the end of the year. And then all the measurements will be provided in the 2022 annual report next spring.
Do you want to add a couple of the questions? Do you have any?
Lindy had a question about when are we projecting the water level to reach its target? You know, based on my assessment of the plan there, 2030 is when the water level would reach its target. There was a question about how old are the projections. Those projections were developed in 2015 or previous as part of the development of the basin plan, is my understanding. And I don't think there were any other specific questions. Oh, in reference to a Cleith Harris geologist TM that references 12 feet is the elevation necessary to prevent seawater intrusion. I don't know specifically what is being referred to there, but if there's more specific direction into which TM is being referenced, I can review that. I mean, I have all the Cleith Harris TMs. There are many of them. The Cleith Harris geologist has done extensive work analyzing this basin and has put together a lot of great information that really I feel is guiding how the BMC is monitoring and managing the basin today.
Well, you can add, you can ask them that question directly since they're still around. I mean, you know.
I can, yes. I can.
You won't have to do a lot of research, just ask them.
Okay.
So with that,
yeah, I had a question within my stand, right? Within my comment, was about the chloride levels in the S&T.
I can't speak to S&T's chloride levels.
They're in this.
They're in the chart.
Yeah, in this agenda item 9C, you can see them in the LA10 on the.
Okay.
But that's not your production well. Yeah, chloride, it is?
Yeah, okay. LA10 is our production well.
No, LA10
is... Oh, I'm sorry, Rosina. LA8. I apologize. Oh. LA8, I'm sorry. I was trying to take one of the Golden State wells.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that then, unless anybody has anything else, we'll go ahead and adjourn. Do we have a date for the next meeting?
The next regularly scheduled meeting would be August 17th. Okay. So I'll work with BMC party staff to see if we'll be ready for a meeting at that point or if there's urgent items we need to bring back.
Next meeting is tentatively scheduled for August 17th. Same location, same time. And with that, then we'll go ahead and adjourn. Thank you.